Welcome to Passion to Power with your host, Michelle Zeitlin. She's a creative producer who quote-unquote wears many hats. She's also a talent and literary manager and founded the company Morzap Productions and Management. She develops people and projects across all media. Her guests encompass the gamut, from artists to authors, actors to activists. Please welcome Michelle Zeitlin, Passion to Power.
Brad Danks.
Tell me your title, your official title, and what that means in terms of what you actually do on the day-to-day.
Oh, well, I'm president of OMG Media Group and OutTV Network. I'm the CEO of the company, and what do? I always say that I clean the toilets that are always full. My job is, specifically, I deal with everything from regulatory, government, shareholders, legal, but most of my time is really spent on day-to-day on distribution agreements for the network in terms of our platform deals and such. But I also, of course, oversee the company in terms of both strategy and management on a day-to-day basis, working with the teams and making sure that all of that's aligned with, you know, our overall, I'll use the word vision for the company, and the other things that we try and incorporate in the business. We build shows from smaller shows. A lot of networks don't do that. They want everything to be amazing from day one. Some of our shows will always say first season may not be great, but we want to make seasons two and three. So let's work on it. I think a lot of producers stumble under the weight and the pressure of having to hit a mark out of the gate, you know, particularly on something that's new. I mean, how many TV series that you love when you go back and watch the first season, you sort of cringe and you go, oh, they really didn't figure it out. You know, it took them to season two and three. I think that's more natural and we should be more accepting of that in the way we approach things. So I sort of instilled a lot of that sort of stuff into it. And you know, it's been that. And of course, I think with respect to, you know, success, also there's some luck in there too. I did learn a lot. I worked a bit. I've done a lot of interesting consulting things over the years too. And I've learned from, there was a gentleman who used to work in marketing at New Line in LA that taught me a lot about underserviced markets and finding your niche. And you know, his saying was always, if you're not a studio, don't try to be a studio, that sort of thing. And that was really valuable in terms of looking at the overall market. So, you know, I met some smart people and I've listened to them about how they do things. And that's been a really important part of my success. But, and, you know, just being lucky at times.
And you're located where, in Vancouver?
I'm in Vancouver, British Columbia. It is very rainy today, so. You know, yeah. That's not unusual this time of year for sure.
Right. But then it clears up and it's just gorgeous.
Yeah. We get usually spring arrives, starts to arrive during the month of February. So we get flowers now. And so the rains are, you know, are useful at this time of year. But it's nice because winter here is not that cold, but it is nice. The spring can be beautiful and summer's gorgeous, as you said.
Yeah, I love Vancouver. I love all of British Columbia. I have history in Banff. Mm-hmm. I was a young dancer at the Banff Festival of the Arts. And then, of course, the Banff TV Festival. And Vancouver, I have half a dozen clients that live there. And it's just it's gorgeous and refreshing. And you did out yourself with the out because the Canadian out came out with the out.
Yeah, no, the Canadian, it's funny. The channel has a checkered history. I didn't get involved in it in the early days. It had an initial brand of Pride Vision. It went for 3 years. And then a second group bought it and they turned the name to OutTV. And then we, the group that I'm with now, acquired it in 2006. And I became the COO at the time. And the CEO is somewhere in the building. He is left that spot. He's I wouldn't say he's retired, but he's slowed down his time. James Shabbick's name. And the business was not great in 2006. They'd filed for bankruptcy. Mm-hmm. And we sort of began the process in 2006 of rebuilding it, first in Canada. And then about, you know, 8 or 9 years later, we started gradually globalizing the business. And now we've been moving it all over the place. Current focus is primarily on the 7 English language speaking first territories, which obviously includes Canada, the US, but Australia, New Zealand, UK, Ireland, and South Africa. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, the challenges in South Africa is much better with respect to LGBTQ plus rights than the rest of the continent. And the rest of the continent takes their lead from South Africa. So it's a great place for us to be. But there's definitely challenges inside many of the territories of Africa. So that's certainly problematic. But we face those challenges in Europe. We face them in the US, let's be clear. So it's nothing new for us.
No. So LGBTQIA is added, and your products and your shows that I've seen cross the gamut from scripted to unscripted, some really cool docus about real people, with a focus heavily on Canadian characters. And then are you expanding in different ways? Are you focusing on narrative, non-narrative? Tell me kind of an overview of your slate.
Yeah, I mean, some of it sort of gets into the current strategy, but we've always done all of it. You know, we've done original drama, we've done scripted, unscripted, comedy, a mix of things. Oftentimes that's driven by what's available in the marketplace. Especially when it comes to acquisitions. Over the last 5 or 6 years, it's been much harder to acquire premium content, particularly that we're acquiring now for more territories. So we shifted very heavily to doing original production. We've focused more on unscripted, more reality, simply because we can increase the volume a little faster. But we've still done several dramatic and a big scripted comedy last year. So, we're open to everything. We did a feature film last year that we'll release probably this summer that we're very excited about. And obviously that's scripted. So we're doing both, but it has been very much about getting the volume up to the amount available. Part of the issue is, can we get distribution on the priority platforms, the ones that most people are on? And in order to do that, you need a certain amount of content, probably no less than 400 hours of content, and probably no less than a refresh rate of 20, 25 hours a month. And so we've been producing that almost ourselves. I mean, fortunately, we have a considerable running start. We have a library that goes back, more than 20 years in some cases. But specifically the last sort of 6 to 8 years, we've been producing a lot of things. And so to sort of answer your question about the community, we do a lot of things to make that. We do a lot of smaller documentaries. The core for us, the core of our approach is to find filmmakers and storytellers in the community and really empower them. So, for example, we have a strand called Outspoken that we created. It sort of is documentaries, stories told by people in the community, and it ranges from members of the transgender community to members of the lesbian community to, we have one called Pride in the Tundra, which is, what is it like growing up gay in an Inuit village on the Arctic Circle? So you get these stories that you, we like to say the stories that we wouldn't thought of telling, and they've come to us, and we've given, some cases we've built teams around the filmmaker. Sometimes it's just been about giving them the money they needed, whatever it might be. But that's helped us spread into areas of the community which are underserved. Our view is the whole community is underserved. But the biggest challenge for us, really, to be perfectly candid, is the balancing act between making commercial programming that people will pay for, which drives the product and drives the business, versus making shows that meet the demands of all the different elements of the community.
So let's talk about all the different elements of the community. So you recently launched, or I just happened to catch in our conversation, this loud, wonderful logo.
Oh, LTV Proud is our FAST channel. And so we started doing subscription video on demand, and we've moved across a number of platforms. By the way, we launch on Amazon Prime as a channel on February 16th.
Oh, this is timely.
In the US, yes.
Cool.
So we're already in Canada, we're already in Australia, but we needed to get in the US, and that's happened. We've launched on Apple TV Plus as a channel in the US. We've launched with Roku's premium service in the US, and we're also on both Comcast and Cox. And we have other opportunities in the mix.
Yay!
We like the subscription video on demand model, where we're only $3.99, you know, $4 a month. So it's, you know, it's a cup of expensive coffee from your local, you know, for a month of great content. But, you know, what happens is what most people will tell you about subscription services is 20% of your content gets about 80% of your viewing. Hmm. It tends to be your new shows, the ones that you're promoting the most, the new seasons of older shows, that kind of thing. And that sort of stat is pretty typical right across the business, from, you know, from Netflix to Disney on down, right? And so your content begins to age in your platform. So I think right across the industry, you're seeing new licensing agreements. But the FAST channel universe is emerged to service that long tail. So when we release a show and it's on our platform and it gets a couple of years old, it doesn't get a lot of viewing. So now moving it into the free advertising supported platforms, mm-hmm. We have more FAST channel launches coming. And the FAST channel that we launched in Pluto TV Canada is now available globally. Like I don't mean through Pluto TV Canada, I mean that we can launch that service in any country in the world because we control those rights. We can build a global product, which we distribute, and you'll see the same feed in, you know, the US as you do in Canada, as you do in Brazil, as you do in the UK, as you do in Israel. And so that's, you know, that's another part of the business that we've needed to push into, and we're doing that. And we've had some great meetings with platform partners. As you probably know, a lot of them include, you know, television set manufacturers now, which is sort of a new phase in the business. So we wanted to differentiate the OutTV Proud from the SVOD service because it's free, ad supported, as opposed to the premium subscription service that we offer. There was already enough brand confusion out there, but that's the reason for the name.
Got it. Well, it's great. I love the logo. It's you know, it's everything. It's colorful and it's loud and it's proud and it's bright, colorful, and I love it.
We tend to be rather loud, yes.
Yes. Though you are rather subdued.
Well, you know, there has to be a bit of yin and yang in every organization.
Absolutely. So you used a couple terms that our audience members may not know. So would you explain long tail and FAST TV?
Yeah, you know, FAST is an acronym for really free ad supported television. It really is television in the 1980s, where, you know, you watch, turn on a linear feed and you watch the, you know, whatever you're watching, it's all ad supported and it's right there for you and you don't pay anything for it, it's free. You know, whereas the cable bundle became about a subscription fee combined with advertising, I know what's really happened is that the business has gone, you know, getting rid of the cable bundle, it's gone in two directions. It's gone back to free linear. People like linear. They like a curated offering. They like the fact that they can lean back and watch it and not, you know, and have it curated for them. I guess they're about four times more likely to watch a linear feed than they are just on demand. And then, you know, SVOD is the reverse. So essentially we've taken the cable bundle and pulled it into two pieces. And the FAST channels are the advertising piece now. The other, what was the other term? The long tail.
Long tail.
Well, the long tail came from a book written by Chris Anderson, who used to be the editor of Wired. It was a famous book. And Chris argued at the time that that there was a huge amount of business in the longer tail part of the business. In other words, not the front end of the business. And he's right. He's right. People, there's, you know, all of the shows that we have get watched somewhat. You know, the, you know, I sort of describe the business sometimes as like a comet with the front of the business pulling the rest of it behind. And that's sort of the idea of a long tail, because your premium shows are getting most of the attention, but then people get into the service and they say, well, there's a lot here. There's a lot of other shows that I can watch that are interesting. And, you know, if they keep adding shows every month, well, you know, this will be fun to be here. And that's really what you do. So you, you know, and your most expensive shows are your big shows that you're using to draw in the subscriptions. But having that, you know, long tail content, that depth within your service is important, because that's also a place we get to tell a lot of stories that are harder to tell, you know, at the premium level. You know, one of the challenges you have with LGBTQ is how aggressive is your programming. And, you know, a same show that might work for a straight audience with, you know, people making out or even having sex, you know, look at shows like Game of Thrones and stuff, right? In a gay context, might make advertisers squeamish. Strangely, they're less squeamish with lesbian sex than gay male sex in terms of advertising. It's just a truism of over the years. You know, we've certainly found a shift. Certainly in Canada, there's been a big shift, particularly in the last 5-6 years. We have big brands that advertise on us. I mean, car companies and major brands that you would know. We have some of the biggest brands in the world that now advertise with us and are not concerned about it, you know, and that's new. You know, it was not that way when I first started at OTV. There were the line that you would get, and you still get in different places. And I noticed this as we go into different territories that are behind. They say, well, I don't have a problem with it, but somebody else might. Mm. Which I always say means that you have a problem with it. But that's sort of a, you know, sort of a thing that you get hit with. But we've sort of reached the point where we don't worry about it anymore. We know it's a factor. We kind of build it into the business model as a given. But then you get opportunities. You get brands that step up and say, we really want to make it with this community. We want to express ourselves to them. We want to be part of it. This includes, you know, major financial institutions and major services groups and major furniture companies and stuff, without using any names. And they take advantage of the fact that the community tends to be very loyal to those that show up on their behalf. And there are brands that have taken advantage of that. I mean, there's famous stories of, you know, Absolut Vodka being built by, you know, the LGBTQ community in San Francisco. And there's other stories as well. And so there's enough money in the advertising space out there that, you know, that I really think that there are brands that are prepared to miss out, but there you go. You know, there are people that we put on OTV that are considered poison in the red states in the US. And I won't mention them by name, but you can probably guess from some of our shows. And we don't care. You know, it's not a matter. Get over yourself. If you don't like it, you can go do something else. I've stopped making excuses a long time ago, Michelle.
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, we have wars between CNN and Fox, so I can only imagine if you're in the LGBTQ world what you're stacked up against.
Yeah, well, it's funny. We've at various times we've been on just about all of them with something we've done. It's really funny. I remember years ago we were on the Bill O'Reilly show for something we did, and
wow.
We opened the Rachel Maddow show last week in the U.S. one of our nights with our new show with.
I love Rachel.
Yeah,
I'm a huge fan.
The new Stormy Daniels series. She was cracking up about. So that was good.
That was fun.
Yeah.
Do you, I don't know if you're allowed to say, but do you have any favorites that you have on your channels? Any shows you particularly like?
Oh, you know, I usually, it's funny, you know, I love, you know, I love our new drag series, Call Me Mother. It was, that was really, really good. I've loved, you know, I'm just getting into the new Stormy season, the DILF series that she's done as a host. I think it's a lot of fun. A lot of her shows are really fun. I have to confess, though, I'm always a sucker for the ones with heart, right? Yes. Like Shine True, which is the transgender series that you did with Vice last year. I mean, watching the young transgender people coming out to their parents and stuff is just, you know, I get emotional about that stuff, right? So when I say favorite, I'm a bit of a sucker for that sort of thing. So I always end up looking at those shows. I love all the other shows, like they're fun and you know, and some of them last year, Hot House, X-Rated City, Dr. Jackie, you know, the one the PEG boys do is funny. Tom Fitzgerald's Sugar Highs was good, really funny. Avocado Toast has got a lot of heart. The dating shows are fun to watch, Dating Unlocked and Group Sexed and stuff. Those are all, they're just fun to watch, and watching people in the community. I think it's what I love about what we do is that we work so hard to make sure that everything we do provides a positive view of the community. And back in the day when we were acquiring a lot of shows, and particularly when we needed more content, there were some shows that really made us think, like, do we want this show? Because the point of view was very much, you know, occasionally you get the show that was, why would people do this? You know, you get into an issue around, let's say an issue like sex change or something, and be like, you know, who would want to do this? And I'm like, that's not really our brand. You know, our brand is to empower these people, is to provide them with encouragement to be on their side, you know. And so our point of view is very much, you know, a lens of inclusivity and empowerment. So I don't want the shows to take that sort of position. You know, I don't want to have that thing you see in the news, you know, what I call the false equivalency. Well, it's this or it's that. I mean, for us, it's easy. We're all in, you know, we're all in, you know, to support the community. What we don't do, and it does probably need to be said, we try not to get into the more granular battles that go on within the community around identity politics and things like that. We do sometimes take a step back, sometimes talk to our friends over at the Advocate magazine or over at you know, some of the other publications, and say, you know, this is your job to cover this stuff. I would rather OutTV tell the stories and let the people, you know, speak for themselves and not weigh in with the, well, OutTV takes the X position on this particular issue. I don't think that's quite right for us. You know, there have been times when, you know, we might amplify something and say to ourselves, what's the issue here? But that's very unusual. I mean, primarily it's about positive messaging and bringing, you know, bringing stories to the audience in a way that, makes the community feel good about itself.
In your granular example, my question, I guess, is relevant to, do you find that it is easier on a national or international level with people coming out earlier now, that therefore the programming would skew to younger age? Because I think there's a reflective gay audience that, oh, I wish it was that easy when I came out. But I think there's a current gay audience that seems, at least in the United States, to be more comfortable coming out earlier. Does that come up for your programming?
Yeah, I mean, a little bit. I mean, it was interesting because I can remember probably a decade ago, maybe even a little more, coming out stories was a thing. You know, there was all kinds of shows on coming out. as a thing. You don't get that as much anymore because the kids are coming out much younger and they're coming out to a friendlier world.
So I can't help but turn the conversation over to the Yellow Brick Road for Success, because we did talk about this, Brad. I know you don't want to talk about yourself. You don't like to talk about your personal life, so I will totally respect that. But I do want to know where you came from to end up in this job. I think you have a law focus, right, originally? Can you give a little background on that?
Yeah, I was an entertainment lawyer for many years, and I worked in Vancouver, but I also worked globally in many respects. I did a lot of work for the US studios and broadcasters that were doing shows in Vancouver. And that was, I got my start in the 1990s. I was very young. I decided I was going to get into that area. Yeah, I was, my law friends used to say I had more balls than brains, because I did have a good job at, I worked at some good firms here, but I really wanted to get into the area, but there wasn't the sort of mentorship that I would normally have needed. And so I had to figure a lot of it out on my own. So I did meet some really helpful lawyers in LA that, you know, I got to know and would help me out if I got into trouble, which was frequent at the time. But because the studios were making a lot of shows here in Vancouver, they were hiring local counsel to do aspects of a lot of they did. So I ended up with law practice I couldn't get in LA, because I had, you know, many of the studios I did some work for in some capacity. Typically, it would be setting up a show corporately and then doing a lot of the deals. And there's also Canadian tax issues, which I learned how to figure that out. So whether it was the tax shelters and later the tax credits, I became knowledgeable on that. And later the Germans got heavy into the tax work in the late 90s into the 2000s. And I figured out German tax deals. So that was advantageous. So I spent the most of the early years working on financing around feature film and television, but did all kinds of things. I did music contracts for some artists you would know. I did actor contracts. I did, you know, sort of the whole gamut, soup to nuts. And that really helped me, I think, see the full breadth of the business. I didn't know much about broadcasting. And then what happened is the gentleman I mentioned who's in the office here, Mr. Shavik, he did a lot of shows. He did some shows for Fox Family Channel, Breaker High with a young Ryan Gosling and the new Addams Family and shows like that, that, you know, that we did work on. And James was the one in 2006 who came into Out TV, and I had been doing some work with him, and he sort of trusted me to be the COO and sort of, you know, help rebuild the business. And from there, I sort of learned the broadcasting side, which really was, you know, how do TV channels work? How do you look at it from the other side? You know, I had done many deals with broadcasters before on the production side, but I didn't sort of understand the full scope of how they thought about things. So I had to learn that. And yeah, it was always a steep learning curve for me. And you know, the one thing I always recommend to people is I read a lot. Like, I read a lot. All right. I read at least a book a week and sometimes two, and I read a lot of other things. And I know that that's really important, and I push it on other people. And I don't know why, you know, if I have a superpower, it's that I read a lot and that I'm always starting from a position of absolute humility, which for me is easy. I come by it very naturally. It's like, okay, I'm not that smart. I don't really know what I'm doing, so I better figure this stuff out, right? And so I sort of approached everything that way. And over time, I guess I just saw so much from all different angles that it made it a little easier for me to be strategic on what we did. And I fortunately also got the time at Out TV in the early years. There was so much wrong with the channel when we first acquired it. I think it needed to find a voice. It had upset the cable companies in Canada with some of the programming choices and when they were playing things during the day. I won't give any more details. You can only guess. It upset advertisers. Like they'd really, I think they started with the idea that, you know, if they got an audience that everybody else would just, you know, start paying them more. And I you learn very quickly, you have to be sensitive to who your partners are. It doesn't mean you need to cater to them per se. It means that you have to at least, you know, draw some lines that allow them to join in with you in the business. And so that was what we did. And it really helped push the subscription base up. And over time, you know, we became better and better at what we did. And, you know, I'm used to failure. I fail a lot at things in life. So it's good for me. I can pick myself up and go out. And I think what happens in a lot of businesses is people, like I like to say, you know, fail quick, fail often, but just don't really screw up. You know, don't do something that is irreparable or something that costs you too much money. And so we've, you know, always approached things from a, you know, if we're going to make a new show, we look at other shows we've made. We're very careful to try and figure out, you know, will this work? What level are we looking at?
I wanted to ask you a little more about the word mentor, because it seems like you said there was a shortage of mentors when you needed them. And I think that's one of the things that I try to provide. I used to want mentors and, you know, how to step by step, how do you get into the entertainment industry? It's not like, you know, you go to med school and then you intern and then you follow doctors. It's really, really hard. And where do you latch on to those people who will teach you what to do? I'd love to hear more about what you were seeking in a mentor.
Well, you're always, you can feel lonely when you reach a point where you can't really talk to anybody about what you're doing. And I think it applies, you know, many people. It implies whether, you know, really the higher you are up, the fewer mentors you have. You need to find people that have, you know, been in the experience you've been, but most importantly can provide you with objective information. You know, like when I went from COO to CEO, things changed and I didn't think they would change. I didn't want them to change, which is I would walk into a room and we'd start talking about something. And all of a sudden my opinion mattered more. If I said, well, maybe we should do this, everyone would think, okay, we're doing that because Brad said so. That didn't happen when I was COO, right? And then at first I resisted it and then it became just sort of part of the job. So the question becomes, if I have a real issue with something, who do I talk to? You know, now I can talk to our COO and I can talk to some other people, but you get into situations where who has faced this issue before and how they contended with it and how they dealt with it. And some of the things you can't talk publicly about.
Right.
So you need somebody that is confidential because the information is just not stuff that you can share. And so you need people in your life who can provide you with that. I mean, you notice that, you know, a lot of these authoritarians, you know, obviously have people around them that are sycophants that tell them what they want to hear. And the last thing you want is somebody to say, oh, yeah, you're doing great. Everything's perfect. Well done. And then you go off and, you know, fall off a cliff.
And there's a coup.
There's a coup, right? And the one thing we all have in common is they get rid of anyone who tells them the truth, right? Whereas if you're going to be successful, you want people to push back and say, you know, I don't agree. I think it's something. We had a tremendous board member up to a few years ago, sad story, passed away of cancer, but he was an amazing guy, very important in the Canadian industry. And he was a great mentor around early years because, you know, he'd been there and he was able to say, you need to focus on this, or you need to focus on that. We didn't always agree, but it was a very healthy dialogue. And so there have been mentors. I have friends who are, you know, studio executives in New York and LA that I can speak to now about issues, and they can help me. And a lot of the time it just comes down to how you think about something. And, you know, I very much enjoy that. It's a bit of a challenge though, because you have to pick your students well also. You know, I found this when you practice law, you know, you don't pick your clients as well, but you learn over time that some take your advice and some don't. And it's not to say that I'm always right, but I definitely see that a lot of people are looking for permission to do things which I don't agree with, and I'm not going to give them that. Whereas others are more thoughtful and listen and will come back. I had a great moment last week at the conference. It was a young woman there who works for one of the streamers who'd asked me some stuff at MIPCOM, and she walked up to me and said, you know, I remember what you told me, and I've been using it. It's been extremely helpful. I want to thank you. And, you know, that's very rewarding when you get that from somebody.
So thanks very much for listening to this episode, and please share all the episodes with your friends and colleagues. We appreciate your ratings and comments on Apple Podcasts and on social media. If you'd like more information about our programs and our special people and projects, please access www.morezap.com, More Zap Productions for Talent and Literary. And if you'd like to book a special one-on-one coaching or a group clinic or workshop, please access passion-power.com, and you can fill out our form there and make a request. Thanks again. Thank you.